So the story I want to talk about today is about the topology of certain maps in algebraic geometry called, that I will call Hitchin morphisms, and about a miraculous theorem due to Davish-Mulik and others, which relates these Hitchin morphisms to invariants constructed from links, and as we'll see later, invariants of conjugacy classes of braids. So what is the Hitchin morphism? So in, I guess in 1987, Hitchin introduced a certain integrable system, which he pointed out had enormous significance for the study of principal bundles. In the first part of this talk, I'll simply address the case of GLN as the structure group. So in linear algebra, we have the space of n by n matrices and the map which takes a matrix to its characteristic polynomial. One can think of this as the map from the space of matrices to the space of characteristic polynomials. And the characteristic polynomial is determined by its tuple of coefficients. For me, given a smooth projective curve over the complex numbers x and a line bundle L over x, I think of the Hitchin morphism for GLN as an analog or a globalization of this construction associated to this data. So we have a moduli space fancy M, the Hitchin moduli space. It parametrizes pairs V, theta, where V is a rank n vector bundle over X, and theta is an L-twisted endomorphism of V. So in the literature, theta is also called a Higgs field. And one thinks of this as kind of the global analog relative to X of a vector space, V, and a linear operator, theta, on the vector space. And the analog of taking the characteristic polynomial of this linear operator is the Hitchin map. So the Hitchin map H goes down to a vector space fancy B. Fancy B is defined as the space of global sections of some direct sum of tensor powers of L. So explicitly, H sends the pair V, theta to the tuple of traces of the exterior powers of theta from 1 to n. So of course, the trace of the ith exterior power of theta is an analog of the ith coefficients of the characteristic polynomial of a matrix. So with this initial setup, sort of the most immediate question. Suppose I take a point, little b, in the Hitchin base. What does the fiber, mb, over it look like? And so for this setting where the structure group is GLN, there is a very nice sort of immediate answer, which is that over a certain open dense subset, which I'll call b-naught of b, there is a family of curves, C mapping down to B naught, such that over this locus, the Hitchin fiber MB is also the compactified Picard stack of the curve CB. And I'll define what this means in the next slide. So this is how we can describe the Hitchin, the fibers of the Hitchin map for GLN. So now I have to tell you two things. I have to tell you how to construct these curves, C, and I have to tell you what the compactified Picard stack is. So what is CB for a point B of the Hitchin base? CB in the literature is also called the spectral curve associated to B. So a point of the Hitchin base can be written as a tuple, B1 up through Bn, where Bi is a global section of the ith tensor power of my fixed line bundle L. And so given such a tuple, suppose I let little x represent a point on the curve x, and little y represents a local vertical coordinate on my line bundle L. In this case, CB is cut out by the following equation. So how do I think of this? For any point little x on the curve, and maybe I should draw a picture. So maybe here's a smooth projective curve, big X, and here's a point little x on big X. I kind of draw my line bundle L, you know, as this blackboard. And if I fix little x, then I have some polynomial, right? These sections allow me to define some polynomial in the local vertical coordinate y. So over little x, there will be n roots of the polynomial. And as a very little x along the curve, these n roots vary, you know, fiber-wise. And so we get some sort of thing that looks like this. Maybe like that. That's what CB is. So this is CB. It's a curve sitting inside the total space of L. And it's some n-fold cover of the base curve X. Now, in general, if you take really awful sections, then this curve may be terrible. It may not even be reduced. But you know, if you take CB to be integral, suppose that you choose these sections B1 through BN so that the curve is integral, then you can define this thing I call the compactified Picard stack. So the strict definition is that it's the moduli stack of torsion-free coherent sheaves over CB, such that over the generic points, its rank is 1. This is some bunch of words that represents a generalization of the notion of line bundle on CB. But what does it look like? Well, you know that in the case where CB is smooth, this is just the Picard stack of CB. And the Picard stack of CB, the moduli space of line bundles, well, it's a bunch of different, you know, copies of the same abelian variety. So pick bar has some components, which are indexed by a number called the degree of the sheaf. And in particular, there's a component which indexes, which parametrizes the coherent sheaves, which are of degree 0. And we call that the compactified Jacobian, or Jack bar. And pick bar is a bunch of copies of Jack bar. So even when CB is allowed to develop some nasty singularities, Jack bar is, well, it's not no longer an abelian variety, but it's kind of a degenerate abelian variety. It's an abelian variety which has been allowed to develop singularities of a rather horrible nature. And we want to understand the topology of this degenerate abelian variety. So to recap what I said before, so when the point B in the Hitchin base gives rise to an integral spectral curve CB, there's an isomorphism between the compactified Picard stack of CB and the Hitchin fiber over B. And the way you get this is that if you have a sheaf on CB that gives rise to a point of pick bar, then pushing forward that sheaf from CB down to X gives you a vector bundle on X. And moreover, it's equipped with an action of the push forward of the structure sheaf of CB, which you can show is equivalent to this Higgs field, theta. So that's how we get this description of the Hitchin fiber MB as a compactified Picard stack. I need a way to measure the topology of the compactified Jacobian. And for the purpose of the theorem I'm about to present, due to Mollick and others, the relevant thing to use is a certain filtration under cohomology called the perverse filtration, P. So one has a Hitchin sheaf. It's the push forward of the constant sheaf along the Hitchin map. And using the decomposition theorem, due to Billinson, Bernstein, Deline, and Gaber, this Hitchin sheaf decomposes over the nice locus B0 into a direct sum of shifts of simple perverse sheaves. And then using perverse truncation, one obtains a filtration called the perverse filtration P on the cohomology of any fiber of the Hitchin map. So the precise definition right now doesn't really matter. But what I want to emphasize is that it gives rise to something I call a Q-deformed Euler characteristic. So given the point B of the Hitchin base, I have a spectral curve CB. And I have this compactified Jacobian of CB. And I write chi sub Q for its Q-deformed Euler characteristic. That means a certain Q series where the variable Q tracks the dimension of the jth graded part of P, the filtration on the cohomology. And the reason I call it Q-deformed is that if I specialize Q to one, then this just becomes the usual Euler characteristic. Okay, great. Now I can tell you a theorem that I find very beautiful. So this was conjectured in 2010 by Alexey Oblomkov and Vivek Shende, and proved by Davish Malik in 2012. It says that this Q-deformed Euler characteristic of the compactified Jacobian of CB is up to a certain factor, a product of things which are basically built out of Hamming polynomials. So in this product, I run over all the points of CB. And for points which are smooth along the curve, the contribution is trivial. The contribution to the product is one. But for points which have a singularity, so like, you know, if you have a branch point and a singular point above it, then you can form something called the algebraic link of the curve CB at that point. And you take its Hamming polynomial. And then you take a certain piece of the Hamming polynomial, which I call Hamming naught, Hamming superscript zero. That will be some Q series whose lowest term is one. I take those Hamming naughts for all of the singular points and I multiply them together. And that's basically my chi sub Q. So this theorem says that the topology of the compactified Jacobian is, in some precise way, totally determined by knot invariants. So to be more precise about what I mean by the algebraic link of CB at C, so so in this picture, so maybe, you know, locally this is what CB looks like. And maybe here I have a point which is singular, little c. Now, locally, the line bundle is just a plane. So I can look at a small three sphere around the point little c, which I'll call S3 sub C. When you intersect S3 sub C with the curve CB, this turns out to be a certain link embedded in S3 sub C. And by link, I just mean a one. So that's how LC is defined. So let me give the precise definition of these Hamming knots. Recall that the Hamming invariants, it's an invariance of links in the three sphere up to isotopy, which takes values in bivariate series. And for the variables in this series, I'll use the variables Q and A. So Hamming has two variables, Q and A. And from this, I want to produce a series which only has one variable Q for the purpose of explaining this theorem. So if I take a link L, I can write its Hamming invariance you know, I can group together all the terms which have the same power of A in them. And when I do so, there will be some bunch of terms which have the lowest power of A. And so all I'm saying is just look at the Q coefficients of the lowest power of A in the Homfly invariant of L. It turns out that you can always write this as a power of Q times some series whose lowest term is 1. That's how I define Homfly knot. So to give an example, if I take the plane curve singularity, y to the fourth equals x cubed, then the algebraic link around that singularity is the 4-3 torus knot. One can compute the Homfly polynomial using skein theory, just using sort of combinatorial moves. And you can compute that its Homfly polynomial is this thing. Now, the lowest A power is A to the 6. So I look at this Q coefficient. And I normalize it so that the smallest term is 1. And that's how I define Homfly knot. So this already is an example of Moll experiment action. It turns out to be, this series turns out to be the Q-deformed Orlu characteristic of the compactified Jacobian for a certain curve CB. And more precisely, that curve is the rational projective curve, which has a unique singularity of the form y to the fourth equals x cubed. So the fact that this series matches some chi sub q is an example of the theorem. So there is a refinement of this theorem, which is still a conjecture, which still remains open. So the way I presented the theorem, it was an identity of two Q series, one coming from some Hitchin fiber, and one coming from some product of Homfly polynomials, or pieces of them. In fact, Mollick's theorem does have a, in its full generality, does incorporate the A variable of the Homfly invariants, but the beef of the theorem just involves Q, can already be seen with the Q variable. But there is a conjecture due to a Blomkov, Rasmussen, and Schende, which says that you can introduce another variable, T, into the identity. So instead of comparing this Q-deformed Orlu characteristic with some things that I call Homfly knot, you can upgrade the Q-deformed Orlu characteristic to a Q-deformed weight polynomial. And you can upgrade this Homfly knot to the coefficient of the lowest power of A in the triply graded Homfly homology of your links. So Homfly homology, you take a link and it produces for you a triply graded vector space. And traditionally, the gradings are labeled with the variables A, Q, and C. When you take the coefficient of the lowest A power, you get something in Q and T. And so this conjecture refines the theorem from an identity of Q series to an identity of bivariate series in Q and T. Why does this remain open? Well, somehow the proof that Mollick gave was an inductive proof. Mollick used induction on the Puiseux expansions of the branches of the singularities of the curve. And his method, while quite extraordinary, is not able to cover, to keep track of this T variable, which on the Hitchin side tracks the weights filtration, and then the Homfly side tracks this T grading. So in an unpublished 2013 NSF proposal, Vivek Schende speculated that actually there's a sort of larger picture at work. So this picture is taken from the NSF research statements. So His notation is a bit different, but I can sort of point out what things in his notation match my notation. So here, it's rather small, but what he wrote is graded in P of cohomology of de Bolt moduli space. So what this is for me is the perverse filtration of the cohomology of the Hitchin fiber in question. Down here, it's written H infinity of K. And this is really Humphrey homology. And so this was the identity he was thinking about. This series is very closely related to the perverse filtration on the cohomology of the Hitchin fiber. But in the original statement as a conjecture, it was stated in terms of Hilbert schemes of the curve, in terms of the punctual Hilbert schemes of the curve, not in terms of Hitchin fibers. So what is the proposal? So there's something called non-abelian Hodge theory. It says that you have these two moduli spaces. One of them is the Hitchin moduli space I've been talking about. And another one is called the so-called Betti moduli space, or character variety. And it's a moduli space of local systems on the curve X. And these moduli spaces are supposed to be homeomorphic, but not algebraically so. It's a transcendental homeomorphism. And moreover, there's a conjecture called P equals W, which says that the perverse filtration on the cohomology of the Hitchin moduli space should be transported under this homeomorphism to the weight filtration on the cohomology of the Betti moduli space. So the idea is that you can relate the weight filtration on the Betti side to something, to some sort of sheaf on the quotient of your structure group by itself under conjugation. And this involves work of Webster and Williamson. But the punchline is that you can relate the weight filtration on the Betti side to something which looks like Humphrey homology. So point counting on some wild character variety is supposed to be related to a Q series which you extract from Humphrey homology. And so the idea is that you can, this picture is refined enough to keep track of this T variable. So we hope that if we know the P equals W conjecture in some wild generalization of the non-abelian Hodge theory of Corlett and Simpson, then we can recover the Oplomkov-Rasmussen-Schende conjecture. I can say more about this diagram, which I realize is hard to read on the board, after the talk. So maybe the points of showing you this diagram is to raise the following questions. So far, kind of, I've been talking about a story which involves the Hitchin morphism for GLN and certain invariants of links. And in this P equals W story, sort of both sides are associated to, you know, structures for GLN. You can ask if this works for any reductive group G. You can ask if doing so lets you see something more refined about this picture. And conversely, you can ask, you know, if we make progress on this side, can we say something about P equals W or where it comes from? And so that's the starting point of what I want to do. So in the second part of this story, I replace GLN with a general reductive group G. G is this complex reductive group. I write T frac T, or the Cartan algebra inside of the Lie algebra. And I write W for the vowel group of G. So it will be very convenient to write frac C for T mod W, the GIT quotient of T under the action of the vowel group W. Here, frac C, I write C because it stands for Chevalier, because so it's a theorem. Chevalier studied this quotient, and in particular, it turns out to be a weighted vector space. What do I mean by a weighted vector space? Well, it's a vector space with an action of, where the action of GM, the multiplicative group, has certain weights. which are known as the invariant degrees of the vowel group W. So now, for this group G, we have the Hitchin map that looks like the following. Again, you have a moduli space M and a base fancy B. The moduli space M parameterizes pairs E, comma theta, but now E is a principal D bundle over X, and theta is no longer an analog of a linear operator, right, but it's a section, a global section, of the L-twisted adjoint bundle of E. So in my notation, G sub E, this means the vector bundle associated to the principal bundle E that has fiber the Lie algebra G. So without going into details, the Hitchin map H here is induced by the map from the stacking quotients of frac G under the conjugation action of the adjoint action of G down to the GAT quotients of frac G mod G. Then it's a Chevalier's theorem that frac G GAT quotient G is the same thing as frac C. So the Hitchin base in this generality is now defined as the space of global sections of the vector bundle frac C sub L. And frac C sub L means the vector bundle associated to the line bundle L, or rather its underlying GM torsor, which has fiber C. I'd like to generalize Mollich's theorem, but here there's no family of spectral curves to help us out. There is no sort of description of most of the fibers of the Hitchin map as compactified Picard stacks. For certain choices of the structure group G, you do have this sort of description as a compactified prim stack. So for SLN and SP2N, you can do this trick. And for smooth fibers, you have a description which Danagi and Gatescore call the Camerel cover description. You can use a different cover called the Camerel cover instead of a spectral cover of X. And you can again describe for smooth Hitchin fibers or fibers with very mild singularities, describe the Hitchin fiber as some abelian variety associated to this Camerel cover. But in general, you can't do that. We really want to study the most singular Hitchin fibers, because these are the ones for which the knot invariants are the most interesting. So I don't have spectral curves. And that means I don't have these nice algebraic links. But what we can do is that instead of algebraic links, we introduce a new notion, which I'll call algebraic grades. So what's an algebraic grade? Recall that this Chevalier quotient frac C is defined as T mod W. Let delta be the branch locus of the map from frac T down to frac C, otherwise known as the discriminant locus of frac C. And I'm going to write C naught or C superscript circle for the complement of the discriminant. In this case, the Arden braid group of the vowel group is defined as the fundamental group of C naught. Yeah. So what's an algebraic braid? Suppose you have a map from an infinitesimal disk, spec of C adjoint bracket bracket T, into frac C, which takes the puncture disk, you know, spec of its fraction field, into the complement of the discriminant. Well, you're mapping a puncture disk into the complement of the discriminant, so you get an unbased loop in the complement of the discriminant. And if you just think about this topologically, that gives you an element of the pi 1 up to conjugacy. So that's what I mean by an algebraic braid. It's a braid which arises from this kind of construction, from an algebraic map from a puncture disk. This is kind of a local story associated to an infinitesimal disk. But now if I return to my base curve x, you can instead consider a section of this vector bundle frac C sub L. That is to say, a point of the Hitchin base. So viewing this section literally as a map from x into the total space of frac C sub L, you can ask that it sends the generic point of x into the complement of the discriminants. And that's still well defined. And the way I think about it is that locally at every point of my curve x, I have some infinitesimal disk there. And so I get the local version of this story. And what this all means is that in this global picture, such a section from x into frac CL defines a collection of elements of the break group, one for every point of the curve. So at this point, I've shown you that if I take a point in the Hitchin base, viewed as a section of some vector bundle, I obtain from that a collection of conjugacy classes in the Arden break group of the Laval group, which are indexed by the points of the curve. So I guess my generalized question is, can I use these braids that I get, this new collection of braids, to describe the Q-deformed Euler characteristic of the Hitchin fiber? For me, this is the generalization of the identity in Mollock's theorem, or more generally, the identity in the Abramkov-Rasmussen-Schende conjecture. So in fact, I'm going to give you a slightly more structured identity. Instead of an identity of Q series, or even of even an identity of bivariate series in Q and T, I'm going to give you, in this new conjecture, an isomorphism between two modules over a certain algebra. So let H be the graded affine Hecke algebra of W in the sense of Lustig. This is the smash product of the symmetric algebra of the Cartan frac T with the group algebra of W. So this funny little notation means that the multiplication operation in H is kind of twisted in terms of the action of W on the symmetric algebra of T. So I will now present. So in the rest of this talk, I'm going to present two different virtual bigraded H modules. Instead of looking at the Q-deformed Euler characteristic of the Hitchin fiber, we're going to look at the cohomology straight up, equipped with two gratings. One is the perverse grating, the perverse filtration, coming from the perverse filtration from before. And the other one will be the associated grating or the weight filtration. And instead of looking at just the Hitchin morphism from before, I'll need a parabolic variant of this, which I denote with M tilde. So that's what goes on the Hitchin side. And on the Homfli side, instead of using these Homfli knots, these Q series coming from the Homfli polynomial, we're going to use the homology of some complex of graded H modules. And this will be built from certain sheaves which live over the adjoint quotients of G mod G by conjugation. So both 1 and 2 will be some kind of virtual H modules with two different gratings. In 1, the two gratings are a kind of, they're given by a perverse filtration and the weight filtration. And in item 2, one of the gratings will come from just the homological degree on this complex, and the other one will come from an internal grating inside each term of this complex. I should also mention that instead of, you know, a comparison which depends on only an endpoint of the Hitchin base, now this will be stated in terms of a point of the Hitchin base B, and also I have to fix a point little x on my curve x. In terms of the pair B comma x, we have these two items, and there'll be two virtual H modules, and we claim that they're going to be the same. Okay, so let's start by explaining item one. So fix a Borel B inside of G. What is this M tilde? M tilde will be the moduli stack of quadruples. The first two things, E and theta, define the points of the usual Hitchin moduli space M. The point little x will be a point, it's a point on the curve. And finally, there's a fourth thing. This E sub x B will be a theta stable reduction of structure group to the Borel on the fiber EX. So more informally, I would call this a theta stable flag at x. The map from M tilde down to M cross X is simply given by forgetting the last datum. And the second map down there is just the Hitchin map. So the reason I need this is that the difference between M tilde and M has something to do with Borels. And what's really going on is that this M tilde down to M is really an analog of the Springer resolution. So there's going to be some W action coming along the fibers of this map. Again, as before, there's some sort of nice locus inside of the base fancy B. And the technical name for this is the anisotropic locus. So it's a theorem due to Ji Wei Yun. If G is almost simple, then an algebra called the trigonometric Daha, or graded Daha, Daha stands for double affine Hecking algebra, acts on the cohomology of the fibers of this map for all points B comma X in this nice locus, B naught cross big X. So Yun calls this global Springer theory. It's Springer theory relative to the curve B, or to the curve X. What this means for us is that there's also an action of H. This algebra I call H is some subalgebra of the trigonometric Daha. So it also acts on the cohomology. And it turns out to preserve the perverse filtration P on the cohomology. So this is how we upgrade the Hitchin side of Oblomkov-Rasmussen-Schende. We're going to look at the H module formed by the cohomology of a parabolic Hitchin fiber. The upgrade to the Humphrey side is a bit more involved. So I would like to construct a complex V sub beta of graded H modules. So let's fix a conjugacy class beta in the Arden break group. I write beta again for it's a representative of the conjugacy class. You know that there are these standard generators, Coxeter or Arden generators, inside of the break group, which are called B1, beta 1 through beta r. You can write beta as a word in terms of them. And what these beta i's are they're lifts to the break group of simple reflections S sub I inside of the Val group W. using this presentation of beta as a word in terms of the standard generators, one can define a certain stack. It's very closely related to Bott-Samuelson varieties, but it's not quite the same. In particular, it's not a resolution of anything. So I call this an open and cylindrical Bott-Samuelson stack. In this expression, we have some sort of long product, and I write times superscript b to mean that I mod out by the anti-diagonal action of the Borel b in between these two copies of b. So, you know, x is b, x by, you know, x inverse here and x here. And finally, on the outside, this whole expression is taken mod the conjugation action of b on the outside. So we also mod out by the action of b, where b acts by sort of x inverse here and x here. This stack, which I call S beta, is equipped with a map down to the adjoint quotient G mod G. The map is simply given by multiplying the terms in each of the factors together. And this stack, together with the morphism down to G mod G, only depends on the conjugacy class of beta, not on beta itself. You can kind of see this because, for example, in this presentation of beta as a word, if I rotate the words around cyclically, right, because I'm modding out by b anti-diagonally on the outside as well, you know, the definition of S beta is unchanged if I rotate the terms of this, the letters in this word around. The one last thing I want to mention is that in the case where beta is the trivial braid, then the stack is simply giving a stacky and groupy version of the Grothendieck-Springer morphism. So the goal now, to construct V sub beta, I'm going to take a map from a fiber project of these guys, take the fiber project of S beta and S1 over G mod G, and map that down to G mod G. That's going to give me some sort of sheaf by push forward, and I'm going to construct V sub beta from that sheaf. So what you'd like to do is just, you know, take the push forward, say shriek push forward of the constant sheaf along this map from S beta cross S1 down to G mod G. In the special case where beta is the trivial braid, you're taking a map from S1 cross S1 down to G mod G. And this thing is basically, in the case of where beta is 1, it's basically a kind of Steinberg variety. And so you can actually compute its the cohomology of this sheaf. And what you notice is that the algebra H shows up inside. It's a piece of the cohomology. It's not just H. There's also this extra little part, the exterior algebra of the Cartan. But if you take the pure part of the cohomology in the sense of the weight grading, then you just get H itself. So what you'd really love to do is you'd like to set V beta to be the cohomology of this push forward sheaf and take its pure part. But this is not very well behaved, because in general, this map is not proper. So what you have to do is use a construction which is explained in some papers by Webster and Williamson. There's a certain complex which Webster and Williamson called the chromatographic complex. I guess I don't know if you have any comments at this time.
What about the name?
The name.
Oh, well, you know, need to call it something.
So I believe in a paper by Shende, Choiman, and Zaslow, they make the remark, chromatography is a term in chemistry which refers to the separation of mixtures. So this thing I call E sub beta, it's what we call a mixed complex. And it has a weight, you can give it a weight filtration. You can filter this thing, not in the canonical way. But you'd like to separate out the pieces of this mixture, the different weights that appear in this sheaf. And so what this construction of Webster and Williamson does is it produces a complex. The terms of that complex will actually be pure sheaves of weight zero. And that's what they mean by, I guess, yeah, separating out. So for those of you who have been following the story of Sergel bimodules and the Hecke category, this is kind of very closely related to what are called Ruquier complexes or shuffling complexes now. So for my story, what I need to do is I take the pure part of the cohomology of each term of the Webster-Williamson chromatographic complex. And that's how I define the terms of V sub beta. It turns out that each of these terms will then be endowed with an H axon, just as this, in this case where the beta is the trivial grade, you actually see the algebra H. So this is a way to produce a complex of graded H modules. So now I just look at the homology of this complex. There's two gradings. One is the external grading coming from the complex itself, but each term of this complex is itself a graded H module. So there's an internal grading as well. So the homology of V beta is a bigraded H module, or really virtual H module. Okay. Now that I've belabored you with these long technical explanations of the two things I want to use to upgrade the two sides of Mollick's identity, I can come to a new conjecture, which brings them together. So to make things resemble the story from before, let me use Q again to keep track of the grading inside of the graded algebra H. So Q tracks the degree of the symmetric parts, of the symmetric algebra part of H. So from that complex V sub beta, I now use the variables Q and T to write down this new bigraded vector space. The terms, each piece of this bigraded vector space is going to be a virtual H module. I denote it by bold V sub Q comma T. And this is some construction associated to a conjugacy class in the Arden grade group. And now here's the conjecture. Suppose that X is a curve of genus zero. G is an almost simple algebraic group. And B comma X naught is a pair of a point in the Hitchin base in the anisotropic locus and a point on the curve X. Then the cohomology of the parabolic Hitchin fiber above that pair B comma X naught, equipped with its perverse and weight gradings and with the cohomological degree collapsed the way that we collapse it for Euler characteristic. This is proportional to the bigraded virtual H module that I obtained from the braid above X naught associated to the point little b of the Hitchin base. So as I've written it here, this proportionality actually also depends on the W invariant part of V of beta X for all other points X on the curve. But there's a way to write this so that the proportionality only is some power of Q times some power of T. So you can actually write the conjecture this way. This is more precise. And this is something really maybe hard to parse on the screen. But to summarize, you have some parabolic kitchen fiber. You look at two different gratings that you can do on its cohomology. And on this side, you take a product of things where there's a contribution from every point along the base curve. Every point along the base curve gives rise to some braid. You construct some QT series from that. And this is kind of, it's like you Lebesgue integral over the curve X, this function, with respect to the measure given by Euler characteristic. So maybe here I should, rather than talk more about this identity, let me say two theorems. So let me skip to the three theorems. First is that for any such G, I can give you infinitely many examples where this conjecture is true. In the T going to one limit. And in the case where you take G to be the special linear group, where the braid group of the vowel group is now the classical braid group on n strands, then this very strange construction, V of beta, can be used to recover the terms of Homfleet homology. And what this means is that the conjecture I just presented to you recovers the Oblomkov-Rasmussen-Schende conjecture. In fact, it's stronger because it is a comparison of bigraded modules. So kind of the summary is that we have this conjecture in terms of modules over an algebra H. When you take G to be the special linear group, you get back the Oblomkov-Rasmussen-Schende conjecture at a numerical level. And if you further specialize to T equal by setting the variable T to one, you recover Mollick's theorem from the very beginning of this talk. So I don't have a theorem which incorporates both variables, but I can at least get an identity which has Q, but not with T. To say a little bit about the proof of the first theorem. So the way this works is it combines several different kinds of representation theory. There's a paper by Alexei Oblomkov and Jiwei Yun where they study a very special case of Hitchin morphisms and points in the Hitchin base where, so the base curve is now an orbifold projective line. And they choose the point of the Hitchin base in such a way that in my notation, the braid for any points of the curve away from zero is trivial. And at zero, the braid is some fractional power of a special element of the braid group called the full twist. The full twist is some central element in the braid group. And being a fractional power of the full twist is kind of the analog of, in the case of GLN or SON, the analog of a braid that closes up to a torus knot. So Oblomkov and Yun relates the cohomology of parabolic Hitchin fibers to modules over the rational Daha of the vowel group W in this setting. So you go from Hitchin to rational Daha. Then work of Ginsberg, Guai, Opdam, and Rukier gives us a Nizhny-Gzhemolodchikov functor, which relates modules for the rational Daha to modules for some sort of fine attacky algebra where the variable is special, the parameter is specialized to a root of unity. So we go from rational Daha of W to a Heck algebra of W at a root of unity. And that root of unity involves sort of some fraction m over n, which is the same as the fraction m over n. That is the, that gives the exponent of beta zero in terms of the full twist. And finally, so you have some expression which is in terms of modules over this Heck algebra of root of unity. You can use work of Lustig and Springer, and also of Yasushi Gomi, or rather Webster Williamson, to relate this construction, which I called V of beta, to the representation theory of this algebra. So there are three steps. I've thrown an enormous number of crazy algebras around in this talk, but what I can say is that one can think of the rational Daha of W. It's like it's some kind of twisted version of an algebra of differential operators. It's a twisted version of the algebra of differential operators on T mod W. So one way to think about this is that we go from a Hitchin fiber, which is something that lives on sort of the de Bolt side of non-abelian Hodge theory, to something which perhaps lives on the Durham side, insofar as Durham is about, you know, the smooth world or the world of differential geometry. And we have this rational Daha, which also is related to differential operators. And finally, from rational Daha, we passed to a finite Heck algebra at the root of unity. For me, this feels somehow like the passage from Durham to Betty. And that's actually how the Keynesian examologica functor is constructed. It's using the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence. So I speculate, but I really don't have any evidence, that the structure of my proof of my theorem is related to some sort of passage between the three moduli spaces and non-abelian Hodge theory. Let me end this talk with a question which is a more elementary nature. So kind of the crucial point in all this story with braids is the notion of an algebraic braid, where you have a map from an infinitesimal disk into T mod W, which gives you a conjugacy class in the Arden braid group. You can just ask, what are the algebraic braids? So in the case where your Weyl group is Sn, and maybe you know you're working with GLN, so your Cartan is Cn, you have this, you actually have an answer to this question. It's necessary that the link closure of an algebraic braid must be an iterated torus link. And the reason is that a map from an infinitesimal disk into sim n of C can be viewed as a plane curve germ. Then you have the theory of Puissot series for plane curve germs. And using the theory of Puissot series, you can show that any algebraic link of a plane curve germ must be a so-called iterated torus link. But for other types, it's actually not known. I found it very surprising that this question hasn't been answered. If this picture I presented is correct, then algebraic braids have an important role to play in non-abelian Hodge theory, in the study of Hitchin fibers, and as I discussed with Ian yesterday, in the study of Stokes data. For certain groups like SP2N, you can sort of bootstrap from SLN to get an answer. But for like G2 or for type D, it's really quite mysterious to me. I have some meta conjectures about what the answer should be, but I didn't find them precise enough to write down in this talk. So that's an elementary question to pose to the audience that I'm currently working on. And I'll stop there. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Tom?
Life is just too complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, too complicated to form actual questions. So, things running around. Yeah, I don't know. I might not be able to form anything. One thing I was a little bit confused about, you had said Betty, and then you said moduli space of local systems. Not really right. I thought the Betty was the moduli space of group representations. I have that backwards.
I mean, I guess for me, a local system is a representation of pi 1.
Well, but they're like different complex structures.
So I maybe don't understand the question.
Well, there's a thing called the moduli space of local systems
yeah.
that depends on the complex structure on the curve.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the
Adram, yeah. So so I guess for me, the you're referring to the slide with Vivek Chandy's diagram.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that. So I think it's fine to write just a ROM here. I guess after we talks a bit, it seems we don't have to look at Betty at all, just a ROM. And just so when I say local system, maybe let's just say holomorphic connections, holomorphic G connections on X. Yeah. One doesn't need to invoke pi one at all of the curve. There's this bridge between the Durham moduli stack down to a set of Hompling homology. And this is in some paper by Chandy, Troyman, and Zaslow. And what they do is they say that they use the term Betty moduli space. Mm-hmm. But they say, so you have this moduli space, it's the same as a moduli space of sheaves, which have support on some Legendrian knot or link. Mm-hmm. And then they compare that moduli space to these open cylindrical Bott Samuelson stacks I talked about.
Yeah,
that's how.
I'm very far from an expert on this stuff. It's just like, so, being a representation of pi one uses the complex structure on the group, but not on the curve.
Yeah.
And being derived, the local system uses the complex structure on a holomorphic system.
Yeah.
Complex structure.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It should be some very interesting story.
Does the quantization of the local systems play any role?
Yeah, so I think that's something I never understood. Somehow there should be a relation of this story to quantum groups, but it's not the direct one. There's a way to get Hompfli homology from quantum groups, but it's not the construction I'm using here. I guess with quantum groups, you're actually always working with the classical braid group, like a braid group on n strands. But here I work with braid groups, which are braid groups for a Coxeter group, W. And so I thought about this, but wasn't sure how to relate quantization of character values, for example, to this story. But it's an interesting question.
There's also quantum Newtonian adaptation
on the other side. Oh, yes. So I actually asked people what this meant, and I have no idea what he meant here. So in his research statement, he says, there's some picture which is specific to GLN, which involves coherent sheaves on the Hilbert scheme of the plane. So there's some coherent side of this story. And this is the so-called Webster-Williamson sheaf. That's what he calls it in his research statements. And then I asked Jiwei Yun if he also knew what this meant. It seems very, this is not the arrow I'm using. Somehow the proof I gave to construct infinitely many examples of my conjecture holding, it didn't use either Pico's W or this. It's another way, which uses representation theory of non-commutative algebras. and like block theory. So I'm hoping that somehow I can say something about Peoples W from this new approach. But
well, yeah, I mean, we somehow, right, like obviously what we should do since we're here is, you know, figure out how this is all supposed to come out of quantum field theory. You know, there sort of should be some picture where, you know, like secretly this is some other way of phrasing like all the stuff Lev and Alexa do, right?
So I can say a bit about the physics of the original Mollick theorem. So you have a notion of following, what's it called? I'm going to get some terms wrong. Large n-duality. And you can follow some brain through a conifold transition. And when you do that, it makes the knot simpler. The string becomes simpler. So Mollick inducts on Puiseux expansion. He blows up his curve repeatedly. And this makes the links get simpler and simpler and simpler. But what he's really doing is he's passing through a conifold transition. And he actually works. He takes the resolved conifold, and he takes some blow-up diagram, and he works with Donaldson Thomas theory on this. However, I think that's not enough to help with the story I'm talking about, because here we fix a structure group, and kind of in that story, you work with a link, not with a braid. And basically you're changing the structure between GLN for different n. GLN for different n. There may be a way to do it with Levy's, but somehow I don't know how the representation theory, especially the representation theory of this graded affine Heck algebra, fits with the physics. That's what I was maybe interested in.
I mean, where the Cherepnik algebra, that's a Coulomb branch of a 3D gauge theory, and it's like exactly the same one that.
In all types of.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how to fix this in other types. So in, you know, the Oblomkov Rozanski story, right? They're exactly using this 3D gauge theory with Badgering matter plus one hyper, and you know, like rational Daha for Sn is the Coulomb branch theory.
Was it, did you mention rational Daha?
Yeah, so the proof of my theorem uses, yeah. So we go to the ends. Yeah, so I had some way to, Oblomkov and Yun construct an action of rational Daha on the cohomology of the parabolic kitchen fiber. And Yun says that sort of the spherical part of this is de Hooft operators. Hooft operators.
Remember, the Coulomb branch is the whole rational Daha or the sphere?
Well, it's this thing about the vortex defects. Right? So if you want the whole rational Daha, you need one of these line defects.
Yes. That's right. And for the Levi, for the full Levi, for the you want, yeah. Okay. And the spherical part?
Well, the spherical part is
Coulomb branch.
The actual Coulomb branch. And, you know, I mean, somehow this fiber, this should be like, you know.
Hey, how long does this
go? Oh, we can leave it down.
Okay. Yeah, there's a seminar at 3:30.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, right, so, imagine having something like a boundary condition for this Jordan-Weaver theory.
And, you know, somehow, at least my understanding of this Alexi story is, you know, somehow you kind of sneak, you do something a little sneaky. You think, oh, I'm looking at the loop space of, you know, this adjoint with the fundamental mod GLN. Oh, well, that's choosing n eigenvalues. I make those n eigenvalues do my braid. That gives me a D module in that loop space. And I'm taking the BFN D module, taking x to that one coming braid.
Okay, good. So physically, x between the BFN D module and some other module. So these are the modules in Tasmania for GLN?
On the loop space. So on.
On the loop space of
of CM.
Model SM. Oh. Oh.
GLM.
Oh, okay.
That stack, take the loose space.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay.
You're computing the D modules on that guy.
So that kind of reminds me of, you can modify the Hitchin map. So kind of the Hitchin map is for GLN in the GLN case, mm-hmm. but the Lie algebra GLN, you can take instead the Lie algebra plus the standard representation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And instead of compactified Jacobians, you get Hilbert schemes as the fibers.
What are loose space fittings? Okay, so one of the fittings is saying sum the module on this CN squared plus CN. Which is not the BFN one.
Yeah.
But has some other homogeneity which has to be understood.
I mean, this line defect. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of.
Could it be the forward and exponential of the module?